The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand or portfolio so easy it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly, hands off our ideas, Greg Dyke. We've been using a B team all season. Today, we salute Manchester City, the Pellegrini Machini, commiserate with Liverpool and generally round up what was a slightly surreal final day from that psychedelic pitch at St Mary's to Tim Sherwood getting the lad out in front of the class. There's England news, Ashley Cole, best left back in England, Roy Hodgson decides he is, and tales from the continent, farewell to Zanetti and bananas in Bergamo, plus the Liga with the kind of final day excitement you'll only find in the Premier League, and the Europa League finally gets some airtime in this Football Weekly. Hey then, off we go for what is a special end of season pod. Not the end of the season of pods, but a pod that marks the end of the season. And having cleared that up, it's hello to Sean Ingle.
Hello, James.
Hello to you, Sean. Hey, Rafa.
Hey, James.
Hey.
Richardson.
Yes. And Barry Glendenning.
Hello, Jimbo.
Hello, Baz. Right. Hey, we're all a little bit tender this morning. We're all out celebrating last night Man City's win. Not so much specifically as City fans, but just fans of football.
Yeah, we're Barry. All D-mob happy. And,
yeah.
Yeah, it was a good day yesterday. Enjoyed
right,
it.
You were up at the Etihad, but not necessarily in it.
Yeah, I was near the Etihad, standing beside the Blue Moon Cafe and the ladies and gents' toilets and a skip full of rubbish.
Covering all the bases.
Yeah. right. Some might say we would have been better served in the skip full of rubbish. That would have been our rightful place. But yeah, it was good fun. I saw Spider-Man smoking a cigarette. Two small boys painted from head to toe in blue paint. Mm. But that didn't quite work, and they sort of looked more green.
Cool.
But I would imagine they were blue by the end of the afternoon because with hypothermia or something.
Right, it was very cold. Very cold, yeah. All right, that's covered most of the angles on Man City's terrific win against West Ham. Sean, anything else?
How can I add to that? I mean, after such an interesting season, I don't quite buy this. The Premier League, you know, we had so many shocks. Anything can happen in the Premier League. So I don't think that's true. But I do think it was an interesting season, an enjoyable season.
But there were so many shocks. How can you... I mean, there just were loads of shocks. It's not a matter of opinion.
There were not that many.
I'm
going to write about it in my column next week. There wasn't. I will blow your argument away. But basically, it was a good season and an enjoyable season, but it was a bit flat yesterday.
Bit flat yesterday, but not for the fans of Man City as they stormed the pitch at the Etihad and generally went crazy.
Yeah, I think as a neutral, you not necessarily go crazy about the fact that the richest team with the best squad has managed to win the title. But I think it's easy to like them because they're just a normal club now with a normal team and a normal manager who just turn up and work hard and get results and get out of their squad something that relates to the actual talent. Whereas you could say most of their rivals found the way or one way or the other to slip up.
Mm.
No pun intended, or perhaps a small one. And I think Pellegrini has made them likable and has also, along with Soriano and Bigiri Stein, the Spanish guys upstairs, freed them from that inferiority complex that they very clearly had over the last few years, where they would always relate what they were doing to somebody else, to Man United and big
speeches.
Well,
Man United helped them in that quite considerably this season.
This year, of course, yes, it did. And of course, that makes the result and the triumph all the more sweeter. But you just feel that they're a bit more confident in their own skin, on and off the pitch. And I think it's something to be respected. If you see somebody working well, even if they have superior resources, you still have to work well with them, and that's what they've done.
Mm. And Pellegrini showing another classy touch at the end as well, thanking Mancini for his for the work that he'd done in preparing that.
Yeah, I think Mancini had threatened to send some guys around if he didn't.
Barry, you were saying last week whether some Man City fans deep down miss the crazy old days of being, you know, permanent bunglers and bottlers. Sulfordian Blue responding, he says kind of, or she, I'm not sure, they say kind of. I suppose what I miss most is the underdog spirit. The recent victories over our red neighbours have been great, But the ones we got under Sven, the first time we'd won that fixture home and away in years, felt a little bit more special. And Gifted But Lazy says it's not our fault that local neighbours are so keen to roll over, thus making a mockery of the whole passionate local derby thing.
Yeah, well, I was talking to some Manchester City fans yesterday at the stadium, and they certainly don't miss it. And they were saying that it was just horrible, you know, these trips away to these horrible places and just constantly getting beaten and everything going wrong all the time. And they do not miss that one bit.
All right.
And I mean, it's a wonderful stadium they have there, a wonderful complex and campus, they call it. And it's fantastic for them.
How do you know that, Baz, given that you were stopped by a toilet near a skip?
I could see it.
All right. Okay, then. A great stat, Daniel Taylor tweeting, Man City finish as champions with a better goal difference. Their goal difference is 65, which is more than Man United's entire goal scored, Colin.
At the same time, how many days were Manchester City on top of the Premier League this season?
But at the same time, Sean, wasn't that just because they had games in hand?
No, that, not at all.
Well, yes, it was, because they had two games in hand for ages. Yes, it was.
Are you trying to tell me they had games in hand on Arsenal when Arsenal had on top for 128 days all season?
They would have been on top for more than 14 days.
Possibly.
Of course. Anyway, all right.
You only need to be on top in the one day, the last day of the season. That's the one that matters.
Yeah. Cool. All right, well done, Man City, then. Commiserations to Liverpool. Hey, another own goal. Martin Skrtel has scored 4 own goals this season. That's more than any player in Premier League history has ever managed in a single season. One of 50 goals they've conceded this year. The worst defence, etc., etc. Actually, they've got the worst away defence than all but the 3 relegated teams. That's quite a remarkable statistic for a team that came second.
It is, and it could have even been worse. I mean, when you look at the Opta stats, they actually made more mistakes leading to a goal or shot than anyone else in the Premier League by quite some distance. The percentage of goals they conceded wasn't that high.
But bless them for that, because that's what made them and the title race so great, having this team.
Absolutely, and to move from seventh to nearly winning the league was an incredibly impressive effort. I don't know, a couple of weeks ago we argued who'd win manager of the year, and I still think it's a toss-up.
Who would you give it to, Sean?
Don't make me choose.
Well, that's kind of implicit in the question.
I would still give it to Rodgers, just about.
Would you?
And I know a lot of people now give it to Pierce, and I understand why, but I think what Rodgers has done at Liverpool's been particularly impressive.
All right.
I agree with Sean that what he's done has been really impressive, but I still think he blew it. The title was there to be for the taking, and he blew it. And it's hard to overlook that. You know, I thought his tactics against Chelsea were all wrong, and the match against Crystal Palace was just a mess. And that, you know, as consistent as he was and as brilliant a job as he's done, and I was sceptical about him before he took the Liverpool job, I just don't think you can give him manager of the year. I mean, for me, it's Gus Poyet, but after that, Pulis as well. I think what they've done is more impressive than what Rodgers has done, which is not to take away from a great achievement by Rodgers.
Yeah, I mean, Pulis has had the most impact, I think, because he came in late and he turned it around, but I'd say it's harder to take a seventh team to finish second in the Premier League than to save a team that's bad but surrounded by teams that are worse. So I'd say Rodgers is the bigger achievement. And I don't think you can blame him for the Chelsea defeat because that game was heading for a 0-0.
Is it not the Crystal Palace game?
No, he was blaming him for the Chelsea.
Oh, you were blaming for Chelsea. Oh.
Yeah, well, I just think his approach going into that game was wrong.
All right, well, anyway, water under the bridge now. Maybe it's the defeat that you need in order to win next time in the experience. Who knows? Who knows? Will Suarez be around next season?
It's difficult to say. If Real Madrid come in with a massive offer, will he want to go? And will Liverpool be happy to accept the money? But I think Real Madrid probably will come in with a huge offer.
Rafa, what's your opinion?
I think it's 50-50. I think we might... Well, not see him again in the Premier League.
Wow. That would be sad. Okay. Rest of the division? Coming into the weekend, only Southampton couldn't change positions, but as it turned out, only Stoke, Newcastle, Swansea and West Ham did move. They basically swapped places, Stoke moving past Newcastle, Swansea moving past West Ham. And Norwich went down, which was a huge shock. They only scored 28 goals all season to find a team... as goal dry, if you will, you have to go all the way down to, in English football, Lincoln Morland's Railway of the Northern Counties East League in the ninth tier of English football. And they didn't spend $15 million on a pair of strikers in summer.
Speaking of which, right. Ricky van Wolfswinkel, he scored with his first shot on target of the season on the opening day. Yep. And then he only managed 8 more shots on target for the whole season. I didn't score any of them.
I mean, it's a shame for Norwich, but it's quite nice that he never scored again after his opening shot. I mean, it's there's something quite magnificent about that.
It's Luke Skywalker-ish.
Yeah, I think so. The Ramsey goal, hey?
Very nice.
Yeah, all right.
Not even a woof for that, Jimbo.
Well, I mean, I think everyone's all woofed out of that because it was great. And he's a very woofable guy, isn't he, Aaron Ramsey? West Brom, by Virgin Nordicander, they drew with Stoke. Pepe Mel's going to have talks about his future with Jeremy Peace. He's going to have peace talks. Then in a real sense. That's from producer Ben. Anyway, having done that, we can move on.
Well, I just think it's interesting that four teams stayed up with less than 40 points, which, you know, often wouldn't be good enough. Who was it famous? West Ham went down with 44 or 45 a few seasons ago.
I think the average off the top of my head is 37 that you need to stay up.
Anyway, moving on. Tim Sherwood, he's a maverick. His comment was that the scenes, we've all seen them probably, where he invites a very vocal Spurs fan to come down and try his luck on the heated Tottenham seat next to Les Ferdinand, who looked a little bit nonplussed by Tim's stunt. Gave him his gilet to wear and everything. Did you enjoy that?
I think that Tim is very much Dimop happy, isn't he? Yeah. He knows he's going to be off probably today or tomorrow, so he just thinks, what the hell?
He's coming up with some joyous quotes. I'm like a supply teacher was last week's. And then today when he was, or yesterday rather, when he was asked about, you know, the guy who took your place on the bench, what are his chances? Where does he stand in the betting for next manager? And he says, nah, he's English. Great stuff. You think he's definitely going to be gone, yeah?
Yes.
But he is statistically the most successful Premier League manager ever.
Well, his points tally is, I mean, his win percentage rate is over 50%, I think.
Yeah, but small sample size.
Well, all right, but that's only because they're getting rid of him. If he's come in midway through a season, steadied the ship. All right, he's shown inexperience, but he's picked up experience from those games. Doesn't he deserve a bit of a shot?
I don't think his points, average points, is that much higher than Villas-Boas is earlier this season. I'd have to check that. But
I believe that he has the best winning percentage of any Spurs manager ever.
It's like Countdown and Dictionary Corner, where like Susie Dent is fed the big long words into her ear. You've got producer Ben on tap, just typing.
And that's not from producer Ben. It's from another.
So are you telling me that Susie Dent doesn't know all those big words?
There was a claim made a few years ago, which I think Countdown.
This is huge.
I think Countdown.
This is libelous.
I think Countdown have denied and said no, it's not true. But
who is Susie Dent?
Susie Dent is the resident expert on Dictionary Corner on Countdown. She's
Carol Vorderman.
Well, no, Carol Vorderman's the numbers woman, and
is
now
she still?
Rachel Riley. But Susie Dent, she's an academic, I think, from Oxbridge, one of the universities, and she knows lots of big words. Well, at least I thought she did, but apparently now she might not.
Basically, there was a claim from someone who sat next to on Dictionary called a claim, but Channel 4 denied us all, but so I was making that comparison.
It's often the case with people on TV, isn't it? A lot of the assumed knowledge and wisdom that they bring is actually but a thin veneer of producer supply material. Certainly true of Raphael Honigstein. So anyway, Tim Sherwood.
I mean, he to give some credence to your view, he said that he'd been, if he had been in charge for the whole season, he would have definitely led Spurs to a Champions League spot.
Right. Well, there you go.
So that must be right.
But looking at the league table, there's of the 17 teams remaining in the Premier League, there seems to be uncertainty over 8 different clubs now that Arsene Wenger has confirmed he's staying at Arsenal. So Spurs, United, Southampton, Newcastle, West Ham, Sunderland, Villa and West Brom.
Sunderland? Do you think Gus Poyet may move on?
I reckon it's a 50-50 shot, yeah.
Really?
There is a suggestion he's not particularly happy with his role there and the regime.
Right.
Is it the food? Is the food an issue?
I don't know. Well, I presume there's ketchup allowed in the canteen again and ice, so I wouldn't imagine that's an issue.
And Big Sam, apparently as keen to get out of Upton Park as the fans are to see him go. But Tim Sherwood leaving Spurs in the Europa League before he left, which is exactly the sort of thing that gardening leave was intended to avoid. It's Man United who miss out on that after their performance away at Southampton. Great chant from the home fans to Man United when they as they went behind. Are you going to change your kit? Lovely stuff. It's the first Premier League season that Ryan Giggs has failed to score in. That's a stat. Here's another one. Ricky Lambert has scored or assisted 12 goals. That's 6 goals and 6 assists in his last 15 Premier League appearances. We'll talk about England a bit later on. But any comments on Southampton Man United? No? Good.
Pitch was a bit special.
Troubling, I found it.
Haven't seen patterns like that since I tried those magic mushrooms.
But that's the thing. And this fella's groundsman of the year.
Final.
This fella is groundsman of the year.
Do you think he was D-Mob happy as well?
He doesn't seem the chap to get. I was involved in a production in which the reporter congratulated him on being lined groundsman of the year, which you think is a pretty big deal if you're a Premier League groundsman. And he just looked at her and said, I don't need a prize or a title to know that I've done a good job, and kind of gestured at the gorgeous, luxurious mantle of green that was awaiting the players that afternoon. Anyway, so there you go. Aston Villa up for sale. If you've got a penny or two and fancy pumping $200 million into a Premier League club for very little return, there's an opportunity for you in Birmingham.
They have 2 million fans on social media, according to the press release.
Do they?
Most of them who are based outside the UK.
Have they done a little Owen-esque brochure then?
It's just a press release that says we're the seventh biggest club, big stadiums, it's a wonderful club.
Right.
Can't blame
them. I think Villa is a good example that shows you sort of the hidden cost of allowing a free-for-all in the Premier League. I can understand the argument that everybody wants to have a billionaire, that's how you compete. But for clubs who don't have a billionaire, they're forever stuck in nothingness, and there is absolutely no movement at all. And even in other leagues where you have big teams find ways to slip up. And then other big teams who are just as big in terms of the stature and history, perhaps, can take advantage. But the Premier League doesn't allow that. And I think that's one of the good arguments to say some limits of spending should be introduced.
I mean, on the flip side, I don't necessarily disagree with that, but on the flip side, he did put in a couple of $100 million. There was a reasonable amount to spend. I think Martin O'Neill, having got a couple of sixth place finishes, I don't think he necessarily spent that money wisely. And you could make that there was enough money there that, you know, with really good analytical player recruitment, you could have actually done something a bit better than Villa did.
Some whiteboards and state-of-the-art technology, you think?
Did you read Randy Lerner's statement?
I didn't.
Oh, he said, on a personal level, it is time for me, like the Shunammite, to dwell among my own and get on with other aspects of my career. The Shunammite. And in answer to your next question, the Shunammite is a biblical reference to a woman who was blessed with a child for her kindness in entertaining a prophet. I'm not sure in what way she entertained him. And returned back to her own people.
Well, she got a child out of it, I think we can all.
Be careful now. And was returned back to her own people to have her property restored. Three qualities that are essential in every Shunammite, or woman of God: contentment, a kind heart, and persistence. So two of those do not apply to anyone who supports Aston Villa, I would suggest.
All right. He has an Aston Villa tattoo, doesn't he?
I don't know.
I think so. Famously, there was a picture of him. Yeah.
Producer Ben is nodding, so it suggests that he's feeding you again. So,
This is all original material. There you go. That was the final weekend of the Premier League. On a slightly less mirthful note, a lot of people have asked this question, but no one's come up with anything remotely resembling a reply. Why was there no commemoration or even recognition of the anniversary of the Bradford fire disaster?
I don't know the answer, but I completely agree with you. I think it's terrible. It is a slightly forgotten disaster, and an awful lot of people died, and they shouldn't have done. I remember it very well. I was at a match myself when it happened, and horrible. And we should remember it.
Well, indeed. All right. Well, we're going to have a bit of music and then talk about playoffs. Steve McLaren's heading back to Wembley, and he says, I'll tell you something, I won't be taking a bloody brolly. He's going with Derby,
who put Brighton out of their playoff semi-final in emphatic form, 4-1. There they did. That's a fact. We don't know who they're going to be playing yet because QPR host Wigan after a 0-0 in the first leg on Monday evening. Ha! If Harry Redknapp, do you know this? If Harry Redknapp doesn't get to at least to the final, let alone promotion, A, what happens to the finances at QPR, and B, what happens to him?
A, I think QPR are actually, they don't get the Premier League in the next couple of years, are in deep, deep trouble. Mm-hmm. B, I think that's a question for Harry. I suspect he'll, you know, if he's on good money, he'll probably hang about, but...
All right.
Isn't there a suggestion he may have to retire for health reasons? He's got a very dodgy knee or something.
Oh, really?
And sort of, I think it's like quite debilitating and affects his day-to-day ability to walk around, basically, and right. stand up and train.
Other managerial
that kind
things.
Of things, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, that game being played Monday evening. All to play for in League One. Peterborough 1-1 with Leighton Orient. Preston 1-1 with Rotherham after the first legs. Tuesday and Wednesday for the return legs of the League One playoffs. League Two, you're asking, Sean. Well, I'll tell you. Burton won their first leg against Southend 1-0. Very amusing tweets from Ian McIntosh regarding that. Fleetwood are at York Monday evening. Second legs of those games Friday and Saturday. So the Premier League's over, but football, it goeth on.
Was Southend fan McIntosh in a trough of despair?
Yeah, he was wailing and gnashing his teeth simultaneously. It's quite a prodigious feat, actually. England. Ooh, Rafa, yes. You perked up at that. Nothing entertains you in a World Cup year like England. And Roy Hodgson at 2 o'clock today, i.e. not yet in pod time, will be announcing his official... Is he going straight to the 23?
23 plus 7.
Oh, he's going to 23 plus 7.
It's the
7.
B team principle.
Right. Okay, nice. And we already know, or at least it seems that we already know, one or two key decisions that he's made. For example, he tried to get hold of Andy Carroll to put him on his 7-man reserve list, but it turned out Andy Carroll had already gone off on holiday. Which, yeah.
It's a shame.
That is a shame, isn't it? All right, we'll see what happens with that, or indeed if the message gets to Andy, wherever he is. But it also seems, from the rumours and leaks, and if they are to be trusted, no Ashley Cole, no Michael Carrick, no Tom Cleverley. The Ashley Cole one in particular has drawn a lot of surprise that Leighton Baines and Luke Shaw will be taking the two left-back roles.
Yeah, I think it is slightly surprising, I think. Yes, he hasn't played a lot this season, but I think that might have more to do with him going to the wrong kind of Christmas party and Mourinho sending a very strong message rather than him having
He went to Arsenal's Christmas party before anyone thinks that, you know. Yeah.
Rather than him being a diminished player, I think the last few weeks when he was on Champions League, when in the Premier League, he was absolutely outstanding. And I think it's slightly curious. You can, of course, say... I fancy other left-backs. Left-backs is one of those areas where England are really blessed with alternatives. But it strikes me as curious to make that decision right now, because you effectively, by not making it a 30 squad and then whittling it down a little bit later on, putting on Kenny G, etc., in your office, you are depriving yourself of a great player 1 month before the tournament starts. And right. I think that's not the best way to deal with your resources. Italy pick 30, Germany have picked 30. Yes, there'll be some players disappointed, but the priorities are not what these players who will be left behind feel like. The priority is to get the best out of the pool of players you have at your disposal. And if one of them picks up an injury now, Ashley Cole is no longer available because he was only on that B list. I think it's a silly way to handle it.
Sean, as our kind of go-to England fan in this, would you have liked to see Ashley Cole in there? And how worried are you at the news that Roy Hodgson is trying to get hold of Andy Carroll?
The first question, I think it depends on how you want to approach the World Cup. Do you want to try and win it playing like Greece 2004? If you do, I think, you know, you bring Cole, you keep things tight, you keep
but
it
only in that tactical scenario.
I think if you're looking to play more progressively, there right. is an argument that you will play one of Baines or Shaw okay. as your starting left back. And the other thing to mention is I wrote a piece about this earlier this year. The role of fullback has changed,
right?
And I know Cole's physical data isn't what it was, and right. if you are going to be bombing up and down the line, Cole doesn't do that well anymore.
Okay, the one question about one of the questions about England's putative defence is the fact that it's incredibly short of international experience. Luke Shaw certainly doesn't have it. Leighton Baines doesn't have it. Would that not be a good reason for bringing Ashley?
Possibly, although of course the only way you get experience is by playing games.
Right.
I think for flexibility, you could see why you would have brought Cole. Maybe not necessarily started him. But you know, maybe Hodgson will surprise us all by going for it and wants two attacking left backs.
Right. What about the Andy Carroll?
I mean, he gives you an option. I mean, if you know, 10 minutes to go, you're a goal down.
But what's he done this season? He's been out injured most of the time. He hasn't exactly shone when he's come in. Was yesterday a particularly great advert for taking Andy Carroll?
No.
We don't know yet if, for example, other alternatives like Ricky Lambert or Connor Wickham. Connor Wickham.
I would be astonished if Connor Wickham was picked. Boss. I do think Ashley Cole deserves immense credit for, well, A, getting over 100 caps and being so consistently excellent, and B, considering he's a guy who's no stranger to sort of venting his spleen publicly, the very dignified manner in which he dealt with this rejection from Roy Hodgson.
Right. You haven't seen that selfie of him then in the Germany shirt yet, have you?
No.
Right, okay.
Well, I don't understand this point, that it's somehow dignified to say no to being on the B list.
Well, it wasn't that. I think it was the fact that he said good luck to England, I'll be
supporting. Yeah, but he's turned England down. I don't think we should misconstrue what has happened here. He was asked to be on the standby list of the 7 players who would come in if one of the 23 gets injured. And he says, no, I don't want to do that. I don't see where the dignity is. I don't see, as an England fan, I would actually be very upset. I
mean, it's tantamount to saying, do you know who I am, Roy Hodgson?
Yeah, thousands of players would kill to be anywhere near a World Cup squad. It's his last chance for a tournament. And he says, no, because I might not get in.
I just hope he wasn't driving when Roy gave him the call.
No, I don't understand why he's getting this positive press for saying no to England. I just don't understand that.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, actually.
I think a lot of players don't like playing international football and consider it a chore. And it's all very well saying, oh, you should be, honoured to wear your shirt. But the fact of the matter, your country's shirt, but the fact of the matter is a lot of players just consider it a pain. And a nuisance. I personally think if I had the physical coordination to be good enough to be a Republic of Ireland footballer, I don't think I'd ever say no. But lots of other players don't feel that way. And I think they're perfectly entitled to that opinion or attitude.
Yeah, but you wouldn't then praise them for it.
I wouldn't criticise them for it.
All right. Well, what about Germany, eh? So they've announced a 30-man squad. And I think they were one of the first nations to do so, were they not?
They did it on Thursday, just after Brazil, but Brazil actually only picked 23.
Ah, that's even weirder.
Yeah.
We were talking about this yesterday on the fine BT Sport Sunday evening roundup thing, and you were making the point about the fact that Ter Stegen isn't going to be going, which means that Barcelona are effectively buying Germany's fifth best goalkeeper.
Yeah.
And also what the future holds for Philipp Lahm.
Yeah, Philipp Lahm has been called up as a defender officially, but there is this big question whether he might actually play in midfield as he has done for Bayern rather splendidly this season. A lot will depend on Sami Khedira. Khedira is an interesting case because he's being picked despite patently being not quite ready yet.
He's only just come back from what?
Yes, he's had one game since his cruciate ligament injury. But Joachim Löw has said on and off the record that he's so important for the dressing room. By the way, he unites the team, and it is a bit of a difficult team with having a strong Bayern block and a very strong Dortmund block, that he would almost give him a guaranteed place even if he couldn't play.
Right.
That's how important he is. And it's remarkable because in a squad that really is blessed with lots of midfielders, to have that strong a position when you hadn't played all season shows you just, I think, how valued his contribution is. Even off the pitch. There haven't really been any big talking points. The worry for Germany is that they only have two real strikers, one of which will be 36, Miroslav Klose, by the time the World Cup kicks off. The other one is Kevin Folland, who's the under-21 captain, has done well, but he's rarely played as an out-and-out striker. But the Klose thing allows me, I think, just to make one more England point. I think this idea that because you don't have a good chance to win the World Cup, you then should play youngsters because they'll benefit tremendously in 2 years' time, I think it's complete nonsense. A World Cup is not a League Cup. You've got one chance every 4 years to do the best you can. You know, the best you can might only be the quarterfinals, maybe the semifinals if you get lucky, who knows? But you don't use it to work towards a future that might never arrive, because some of the players that look great now might look very bad in 2 years' time. and it just took up a spot in your squad for nothing. So you have to go for it and hope for the best rather than try to be very smart and work towards this golden era that might never come along.
Mm. Another thing, of course, is you don't know how the draw will sometimes open up. I mean, look at Turkey didn't have a great side in 2002, you know, got to the semis. But Uruguay, you know, were a better side, I think, than we appreciated at the time. But again, the draw opened up a bit.
They were a worse side than we appreciated at the time.
Possibly. But you know, in 2010, Uruguay, you know, had an easy draw. They got through again to the semi-finals. So sometimes you never know.
You know. You don't, do you? It's cup football.
And, I mean, going back slightly to England, I mean, people are writing them off, but...
Who's writing them off, Sean?
Everyone. But could you see that possibly working to England's advantage?
I mean, going in without that great weight of expectations? Exactly. Well, you know, didn't that happen in Euro 2012? Yeah.
Italy, Costa Rica, Uruguay. I mean, I mean, England could get knocked out of the first round, or they could do better than we think. And the way who they play in the second round, it's not impossible. They could suddenly appear in the quarterfinals and we're suddenly getting excited.
Many options... Before a ball has even been kicked at the World Cup, are certainly still open for England.
I think they do okay, actually.
Yeah, but that's my point. In this group, the group is rather tough. Do you really see, whatever the personnel, do you really see England's fullbacks bombing on in the rainforest against Italy? Or would you rather see Ashley Cole there giving them a solid platform for maybe...
Well, you could argue that, particularly against Italy, the best thing you can do is run at them.
But don't think they'd physically be able to run at them in that crippling heat.
Interesting. I did also want to ask you, Rafa, because the last weekend of the Bundesliga season has just happened, and Bayer Leverkusen took the final Champions League spot. Hamburg got confirmed as the team that will go into a promotion playoff with the team which, if I'm right, is Greuther Fürth.
Henry Kissinger's favourite team.
I didn't know that, though. Mm. How come?
I think I told you this a few times.
Yeah.
It was his boyhood club.
That's right. Good. Okay. But one team that's definitely coming up is Paderborn, which is quite a remarkable story. And indeed, somebody was tweeting or posting and saying, can you get Rafa to explain what Paderborn are?
Very difficult to explain because they're really provincial side. Mm. Fairly nondescript town in the middle of an area where there are bigger towns around them. Hanover, Bielefeld, not far.
So would they compare with what? A Crawley? Something like that?
I don't know. Yeah.
Wigan, maybe.
Yeah, but Wigan are a rugby team. There's no rugby in there.
And they're small, right? Then what's the size? 100,000?
150,000. Just under.
Okay.
Paderborn have never been in the top flight.
Mm.
A lot of people before the start of the season looked at Bundesliga 2 and said, okay, Kaiserslautern, 1860, you know, genuine teams who've been in the Bundesliga for many times, they'll come up. But no, they've done it, and it's an incredible achievement. And they really have become yet another club. If you look at the Bundesliga now, there's quite a few teams from small clubs with very little financial backing who are just there because they're a little bit smarter than some of the bigger guys around them. Augsburg, Mainz, Freiburg, now Paderborn. It's becoming, and Greuther Fürth could come in as well. I think it just shows you that even in professional football, even at this level, being smart and doing things the right way can take you an awful long way.
All right. Meantime, Pep, big weekend for him. German Cup final against Borussia Dortmund. And that's going to have... Is that going to have a bearing on his future, or is he guaranteed to stay, whatever?
Well, he will stay unless something dramatic happens. I can't really see the club themselves. They're very happy with him.
Right,
They will definitely stick with him. But he's been a little bit emotional in the wake of the Real Madrid defeat.
Mm.
And, you know, if he feels...
It was a tough time for him as well with Villanova.
Yeah, exactly. And if he feels that for whatever reason that he isn't 100% understood or 100% backed, then maybe there is a scenario where he might just throw in the towel. But I think it's extremely unrealistic. What's more important is that this game sets sort of the scene for the next months coming and for the way that Bayern will go into the next season. Will they go into the next season thinking, yeah, we won the league, but it's actually been a really bad season with two big defeats? Or will he have won the double and said, okay, Real Madrid was a one-off freakish bad result, we can sort it out next year? So a lot of the the atmosphere or mood surrounding the camp and the club will hinge on that game in Berlin on Saturday night, which makes it so exciting.
It does make it exciting. It's also the FA Cup on Saturday, but we'll talk about that on Thursday. Right now, unless Barry, you wanted to interject something.
I was just going to interject to see our friends in Spain have scheduled their showdown, La Liga showdown, for the exact same time as the FA Cup final.
Same time. I thought it was at 6 o'clock in the evening. Is that when the FA Cup is?
The FA Cup is
5:30.
There's newfangled FA Cup business. All right, well, let's have that bit of music, and then we'll turn our thoughts to some other foreign stuff, including the Europa League final.
Hello, Football Weekly listeners. With the end of the season fast approaching, we've clubbed together with The Guardian Bookshop to bring you an exclusive offer to get 50% off two brand new sports books. If, like Jose Mourinho, you think you can make better decisions than most referees, you can now test your mettle with 160 fiendishly difficult football dilemmas in You Are the Ref Volume 3. And if you fancy something a bit more highbrow, you can also pre-order The Highlights, a collection of the best writing by legendary Guardian sports journalist Frank Keating. To get your copies of The Highlights and You Are the Ref Volume 3 at 50% off, head to guardianbookshop.co.uk and enter the offer code SPORT. You've got until the 23rd of May, and remember, it's only available to you because you listen to Football Weekly.
If Sammy scores, says, assuming Monday's pod will preview the FA Cup final, can I request a place in the Football Weekly spotlight for St Johnstone, who take their place in the Scottish equivalent for the first time ever after 130 years on the same day? So it's a big day on Saturday. Victory would cap off a great season for one of Scottish football's very few profit-making clubs.
Is that for the St Johnstone's trophy?
No. During a mini Europa League qualifying adventure at the start of the season, they saw off Rosenborg for harshly exiting on penalties against Minsk. While they have again secured a top six finish in the league, will take 15,000 fans to Celtic Park, despite having an average home attendance of only 3,000. Producer Ben came up with two interesting, and out of many potential interesting St Johnstone facts, but here are his two. Did you know who their striker is? Nigel Hasselbank. Yeah, exactly. Nephew of Jimmy Floyd. And they are also the only team, according to producer Ben, but do feel free to call him out on this, they are the only team in British football with a J in their name. Can that be right? Can that be right? Oh, there's some furrowed brows. Barry's looking like Stephen Gerrard, so furrowed is his brow right now. No, I've got nothing.
I'll take his word for
it. All right. Anyway, well, that was exciting, and good luck to them. Abroad, what's left to play for? Well, we said Bundesliga's all done and dusted. In France, they've still got a weekend to go. Still a Champions League up for grabs. In Italy, there's still a Europa League spot up for grabs, excitingly. Exactly. And there's four teams within 2 points of each other battling for that on the final weekend, which is coming up next Sunday. Arguably, though, we should start with the fact that, to everyone's great surprise, banana selfies have failed to end world racism, because possibly even inspired by all the publicity given to what happened there at the Villarreal. A couple of idiots in the Atalanta crowd threw bananas at Kevin Constant, the Milan left back, in their game on Sunday afternoon. And, there's all the headlines saying, again, there is shame, and what a terrible advert for Italian football and that. I have to say, it's not the only bad bit of publicity. The guy who shot the Napoli fan last weekend, well, there was a banner in the Curva Sud supporting him. And I think I'm right in saying that the ultras in Germany as well, but Borussia and Bayern also had banners supporting various questionable... I think there was one saying "Free Speziali" in the Bayern crowd. Who's the guy who's serving 8 years for throwing a block of concrete at and killing a carabinieri?
How's the guy who was seriously injured, the Napoli fan?
I believe he's still seriously injured in hospital.
Is he going to be paralysed?
I'm not sure about that, actually, Barry.
Right.
Not sure. Anyway, yeah. Anyway, Milan lost away at Atalanta, which means that they are 2 points behind Torino, who currently occupy that final Europa League spot, and it's going to be a big game next weekend as Torino head off to Fiorentina, who are in the Europa League, and Milan host Sassuolo, who against all the odds have managed to escape the drop. Well done to them, and their manager Eusebio Di Francesco, who got fired midway through the season, and they brought in Malasani, who I think James Horncastle was saying he lost every single game in between saying cazzo a lot, as he does. And then they went, oh, well, let's bring Di Francesco back. And boom, he kept them up. Anyway, there's a lot of confusion still about who's going to be Milan's manager next season, especially after the vice president Galliani was pictured in the stands at the Stadio Atleti Azzurri d'Italia saying, this guy is crazy, about poor old Clarence Seedorf. Latest rumours involve Spalletti out of Zenit St. Petersburg and Fiorentina's very own Montella, who seems to be getting frustrated with the lack of ambition of that club in the transfer market.
Plus that old guy from the old care home that Berlusconi looked after.
Yeah, absolutely. Great comments from colourful old Silvio Berlusconi, who was doing his community service with some irony in an old people's home. And he came out and, of course, they questioned him and he said with his usual smirk, well, there are lots of people in here who could do a good job of managing Milan. Seedorf loved that. Anyway, a curtain fell on a legend at San Siro. Javier Zanetti played his final home game for the Nerazzurri, possibly his final game in all. But it was a very emotional evening, actually. It was a terrific match. I mean, it was a proper send-off for him, a 4-1 win over Lazio. It was a proper game because they're both vying for those Europa League spots. Packed stadium, apart from the Curvenor, which was closed because of abuse of Balotelli in the derby. But anyway, yeah, 19 years... 5 Scudetti, 1 Champions League, 1 Club World Cup, 4 Coppa Italia, 857 games, and as the Gazzetta dello Sport put it, not a hair out of place. Absolutely remarkable. Anyway, so yeah.
Can relate to that, surely. <Yeah. laughs>
Oh, Russia. Yeah. And hey, it looks like Tom Hintz could be bombing up and down the wing at San Siro next year at Inter. Although that might depend on whether Matt Sarri is their manager or not. We shall see. That's enough of that, though, hey, because there's something very special cooking up in Spain this weekend. Everything's happening at 6 o'clock on Saturday, as you were saying, Barry. For the second weekend in a row, none of the leading three, Real Madrid, Barcelona and Atletico Madrid, managed to win. And Real Madrid are now out of the title race. They lost indeed against Celta Vigo, while Barcelona drew with Elche, who have stayed up as a result, unless I miss my guess. And Atletico Madrid also drew with Malaga. They were at home. They thought they had the winner in the 95th minute, but they were denied by Big Willy. Extraordinary scenes. And it was right there for the taking, was the headline on one of the Spanish papers this morning. Sid Lowe has gone AWOL. But he's going to come back and talk to us, no doubt, on Thursday about next Saturday's big finale. Because, of course, these two teams, first place Atletico Madrid and 3 points behind them Barcelona, face each other next Saturday at 6 in the Camp Nou. Boom. Gazelle 91 says it's revealing that this Barcelona squad, considered to be so inferior, is still in with a shout of winning La Liga. They've been so good in the last 5 years that even when they have visibly declined, they're still good enough to win the league in Spain. That's certainly true. That's going to be quite a final match. Also this week, and involving a Spanish side, Sevilla, who are just outside the Champions League places right now, is the Europa League final, Sean. Now, normally, because of its Thursday scheduling, we never get to talk about this magnificent competition. How about we really fill our boots on this clash of Benfica and Sevilla?
I'm quite looking forward to this.
Good.
I saw both Benfica Juventus games, and
yes.
Clearly, what Clatterbird did in the second leg perhaps kind of overshadowed that. But I was very impressed with Benfica, and given all the defeats and big finals they've had in Europe since the last one, I'd like to see them do it, and I think they should.
Since their last one in 1962, before Bella Gutmann cursed them to 100 years of no success in Europe. Since when, they've been to 7 European finals and not won any of them, including, of course, last year against Chelsea as part of their spectacular
end-of-season collapse, yes.
Yeah. Which they were up for 3 titles.
They lost the league and the cup and the Europa League final all in the space of, what, 2 weeks?
But this time around, they're up for a quadruple. Now, they've already won, let me get this right, they've won the league back in September, pretty much. They only had 2 defeats all season. They've won the Taça de Liga, the League Cup, and they've got the Taça de Portugal, or Da Portugal, or Portugal, or whatever, coming up this weekend.
So, I mean, after last season, obviously, Jesus was crucified for doing so badly, so it's great to see that.
Oh my god, if only you could have seen the look on Sean's face.
I made a lapse of judgment.
Come on, you nailed it.
No, I didn't.
Hey!
All right, okay. And they got the Portuguese Cup coming up this weekend, straight a couple of days after. Wow. All right, what do you think, Barry?
Completely forgotten all about right. it. To be
It'd be great to watch this game almost as a total neutral, no? Or will you be looking for Benfica to end that curse? Or does the
well? I'll be honest. I've always had a soft spot for Sevilla.
Have you?
Yeah, and it's a lovely city, and yeah. So I'd probably be. I just wanted a good game, but yeah, I'd be rooting for Sevilla nominally.
Really?
Because it's the funniest thing I've ever seen happen in Seville.
What was the funniest thing you've ever seen? And bearing in mind some of your misadventures of veterinary nature in your
I saw an orange fall out of a tree and just land on a man's head. And just his reaction was spectacular.
Did it burst or it just bounced off?
No, it was just slapstick. It was okay. Maybe it wasn't the funniest
You've
thing
made
I've ever
a fortune seen. In Germany with that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I don't know, fruit-based comedy. There's something about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Rafa.
Am I right to think that it would be Sevilla's third UEFA Cup?
They won in 2006 and 2007.
So maybe we should give it to Benfica for a change.
You think
so?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Although it's quite nice having this story about Bela Gutman to trot out, and if they win it, that'll be...
Will there be a pilgrimage to his grave, as they tried last year?
Oh, did they try that?
Yeah, they went to his grave.
A bit like in to Drag Me to Hell, where she digs up the old lady to give her back the... Spoiler alert! But anyway, there is something like that.
Yeah, I don't think they went to dig up his remains. Oh. I think
that would be slightly sinister.
Yeah.
And illegal.
Yeah, yeah, it would. This is if you haven't seen that film, again, I urge you to.
I have seen it.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
They
could visit Eusebio's grave as well, of course.
Why would they want to do that when they're preparing for a major European final? Just go visiting
the same
graves of various former stars and players and elsewhere.
All right.
I think Benfica, though, were hugely unlucky to get knocked out in the Champions League by Chelsea in 2012.
Right.
They were hugely unlucky to lose the final last year.
Mm.
And I think they've...
It's almost like they've been cursed or something.
I think they deserve a bit of a break.
All right. What about poor old Sevilla, though? Anyway, and that stirring comeback they had against Valencia. Well, there you go. Enjoy that game, listeners, on Wednesday evening, live from Turin. That'll be quite a special occasion. And we will be back actually on Thursday to review the events therein and look forward to the incredible Saturday of action coming up in this Football Weekly Extra show that I thought we weren't having. But in actual fact, then we realised that there was the Europa League final and things. And we're having it anyway. We're going to be here on Thursday. Jacob's going to be here. Michael Cox is going to be here. Philippe Auclair is going to be here. So that's something to look out for. But in the meantime, that's it for today. Obviously, we'll get Sid on the phone to talk about the massive thing in Spain, which he hasn't talked about today. So, thumbs up all around. But anyway, many thanks, Sean Ingle, for being with us today. Raphael Honigstein, danke schön, and thank you, Barry Glintley.
Gerv Margot.
Exactly.
Is what you want to be saying to me.
Right. And you as well, producer Ben, and you, listener, will be back midweek. Bye-bye.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today. No credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code Guardian.